You're listening to the Barry Egan Tapes on News Talk. I'm Barry Egan from the Sunday Independent, and I'm talking with Roisin Murphy. Roisin, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Roisin, you said Ireland was a great place to grow up. Odd. How odd were you growing up?
I think we were a bit different, yeah. I mean, my family, my father was irreligious to the point of religiousness. You know, he really didn't like the church. So it starts somewhere there. I think my mother was very much a kind of modern woman as well. And they were both good looking and intelligent and very modern in their ways. So, and also their friends were, they weren't the only ones like that. There was certainly a kind of movement towards modernity going on in 70s Ireland. And I'm from Arklow. And Arklow was a very wealthy place. You know, it was doing really well in the 70s. It had some of the highest employment rates in the country and people were having a right crack, you know. So, but there was a sense that we were a little bit of outsiders, you know. We weren't religious. Everybody in my family worked for themselves, you know, all self-employed people, people who had businesses. And so there wasn't this sense of kind of going out working for other people or compliance in my family, really.
But that sense of being an outsider was translated in a horrible way in one sense, because you were bullied at school and one day your mother had a bag of all the hair that had been pulled off your head.
That's right, yeah. I think I don't ever feel a victim about that because I was asking for it.
Nobody, in some ways, you know, to have her hair pulled off her head.
No, they don't. But I think people really find that sort of thing very shocking now. And children and schools are being cleansed of these natural impulses that are in children, you know, to the point maybe that children are shocked when they grow up and they have to go out into the real world, you know. So there is something to be said for facing adversity young, I think. And certainly in my case, I mean, I faced all kinds of adversities when I was very young.
But didn't a lot of kids follow you home one time and there was a bit of ice in your
Somebody threw like a puddle at my head, yeah, and it split my head open and I've still got a kind of a dint in my head. It's probably what's wrong with me, honestly. But yes, I mean, but the way that I was brought up, to understand or to feel or to be deluded into thinking that it was because I was great that I was being bullied, you know. So it wasn't,
Is that what your father would say to you?
Well, my Auntie Linda would say, "They're just jealous," and things like that.
Your hair will grow
back. You know,
back.
They didn't really talk to me that much about the bullying, my parents. They didn't really put that much pass on it, as we would say, you know. It wasn't as big a deal as it is today. Yeah. As I say to you, you know, there is a thing where children are being wrapped up in cotton wool. And I'm not saying that children should be bullied or anything like that. But there's something about it where it's everything's been so cleansed and softened for children nowadays, you know, that...
Your dad and your mum as well seemed really fascinating, extremely cool characters.
Yeah.
Tell me some of the stories. There was one story of your dad brought home a cockpit from a crashed World War II bomber plane that he found in the mountains.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, he did. He found that he didn't find it in the mountains. He bought it off someone who found it in the mountains and brought it back to the house. And it smelled of death. You know, I can still remember the smell of it.
What does death smell like?
It was very musty. And there was you could get into the cockpit, you know.
Did you get into it?
Yeah.
What age were you?
Oh, I don't know, 8 maybe.
So that's what an 8-year-old Roisin Murphy was doing, getting into the cockpit, smelling death.
Yes.
And you found
a creaky old, you know, house.
You found a chewing gum behind in the cockpit.
Yep. Our house was scary.
But
anyway,
the pilot had obviously put it there before he flew into the mountain.
That's right, yeah. And we were aware of that, you know. I think that was the kind of thing my mother would have said to us, you know, there's the chewing gum. He was chewing that before he went down. And she's quite dramatic like that, my mother.
And you obviously didn't inherit that from her. But in terms of drama, there was also the night that your dad woke you up and told you to come downstairs and he wanted to show you what was in the car. What was in the car?
There was a horse in the back of the car. Well, when I say a horse, a pony. But not a tiny little pony, you know, a fair-sized pony. he had, I think, taken out the seats out of the back of the car. It was an estate car. And somehow he had slid the thing in onto its side. And this was, I don't know, 11 o'clock at night. So he'd obviously done this deal in the pub. Now,
what was your mother's reaction to a pony?
She was crying.
Home?
She was crying on the street. You know, my father, I speak a lot about them being wheeler dealers, and they get kind of upset about that, you know, because actually they were business people. My father had a very successful business fitting out bar furniture at a time, you know, where a lot of pubs in Ireland would have been going from like sawdust on the floor to having lounges and fitted soft seating areas and those kind of things, you know. And so obviously that he was a businessman, but he was a businessman in night culture, if you like. So he was out late and he was
so you got
in
that,
that
him,
world.
You?
He was in that world of like, you know, drinking and singing and carry on, you know, and that was where his business was. You know, and yes, there was lots of wheeling and dealing in the sense that, you know, so there was one
there two
time,
Dutch masters that
there was two, there was anything, as I always say, there was anything from lorry loads of scrap lead to selling Dutch masters in Christie's.
How did that happen?
I'm not 100% sure. They were bought from some clearance, I think, of a pub.
And my Dutch mother, masters?
Yeah. And my mother has an exceptionally good eye, you know.
Yeah.
And the thing I do remember about the story is that there was three or four times when they were nearly sold for very little. And my mother had to step in, you know, to the point where there was two antique dealers caught getting in through the window of our house to go and get the paintings off of the wall. These guys had thought that they had done a deal with my father in the pub for these things. Anyway, my mother managed to skull haul them out as well. And
what does skull haul mean?
To pull them out, you know, and tell them off. And so she did a lot of skull hauling, actually, my mother.
There's one more great story about your dad, which I love. He told you one morning that you weren't going to school and he brought you in the truck.
The lorry load of lead, yeah.
Yeah, and he brought you into Brown Thomas and said, you can have whatever you like.
He picked me up in a articulated truck and then we went somewhere near Dublin and he drove the lorry onto this weighing scales, weighed it with the lead in it, then took all the lead out, then must have got a fortune there. And then we drove just the cab into the centre of town and we went into Brown Thomas and he said, anything you want, anything at all, go and get it.
What did you get?
Clothes and shoes and hats and jackets and jeans and dresses and everything.
And is it true growing up that you used to sit in the window of your house all dressed up in the cars?
Just to put that into context, there was times when there wasn't any money.
Yeah.
But when there was money, we live like kings, you know, so
you can eat dresses.
Yeah. And when there wasn't, it was, you know, a whole different story.
But did you dress up and sit in the window and the cars would drive by and look?
I did, yeah. Yeah. We lived right on the road where all the tourists used to come down through from Dublin down to the south. And in the summertime, there would be queues of traffic outside our house. And it got it into my head to dress up as a Chinese woman because I had this sort of Mandarin kind of outfit that I had got off an aunt in Manchester. I put the makeup on, the white makeup and the eyeshadow to make my eyes look Chinese and then I would put these two naked dolls beside me on the windowsill and just sit there waving. And I was always an exhibitionist in I suppose in that way, and a visual kind of performance I was always interested in.
Where did that come from? Was that from your aunties? Or?
That's just pure out of me, that I think. That's not something that's I saw particularly, I don't think.
Didn't your auntie have a vintage shop in Manchester?
Oh, well, I mean, the thing about clothes were on both sides of the family. My mother's family all knew how to make clothes. They were all exceptionally well dressed. And of course, I was always around women who would know like what fabrics were called and what colours were called and things like that, what cuts were. And I watched lots of movies with my mother. Growing up, my ma's a real film file. You know, she really loves films and I loved them too. I was the kind of kid who could sit through two black and white movies, you know, at the age of eight, like slow.
Kind of All About Eve? Kind
anything. Of, yeah. Anything at all I watched. And even scary things that perhaps I shouldn't have watched, but they were great, you know, like things like The Night of the Hunter is one I really remember my mother saying, watch this, this is brilliant. And being absolutely petrified, you know. After we'd watch these movies, we'd draw dresses. So I was always made aware of like different eras. And I was brought up because of my mother. I was brought up knowing. Now it surprises me that other people don't look at a house and say, that's an Edwardian house, or that's a Georgian house, or that's a, you know. I know these things. I didn't have to learn them. They just sort of, mainly because of my mother, really, they're just there. They just came into me by osmosis.
And didn't your dad introduce you to how to be yourself? And like, if you'd say, you said, what do you want to be when you grow up? And you say, I want to be an air hostess. Yeah. Well, why wouldn't you? Why not be a pilot? You know.
Yeah, my dad had no sense of restriction or boundary for me and what I could do. Or at least he didn't outwardly express that. The other thing my dad has and had is a very philosophical way of thinking, and he really opened both our minds, my brothers as well, of ways of thinking, big questions, why are we here, you know, big questions that I think are really healthy for kids. I was just reading an article last night. It's very healthy for children to think that way, I think, or to be taught to think in big ways, in big questions and so on.
And when you were 12, you moved over to Manchester. Your parents broke up and you stayed there on your own, effectively.
That's right, yeah.
Not even effectively, you stayed there on your own.
Yeah.
12 years of age.
Yeah.
In Manchester.
No, 12 I didn't stay on my own.
But you were...
We moved when I was 12.
But when then
they broke up when I was 15.
So, okay, sorry, big mistake.
So everything,
when you were 15.
Everything kind of imploded at that
point,
yes.
But still, your 15-year-old child on her own in Manchester, living on your own.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that.
Well, it also wasn't as